Welcome to KGOU's Assignment Radio. I'm your host, Haley Thornton. Today we'll hear stories of art and inspiration produced by the reporters in the University of Oklahoma's radio news class. From peasants in rags playing tambourines to kings in bright red velvet robes addressing loyal followers, Norman's annual medieval fair has transported visitors to an age of chivalry and tradition for nearly 40 years. Assignment Radio's Molly Evans spoke with blacksmith Barack Haddock about his pyrotechnic passion for turning scrap metal into the unexpectedly beautiful.
It's 9 a.m. on a brisk 40-degree April morning, an hour before the annual Norman Medieval Fair commences in Reeves Park. Frequent gusts of wind carry the familiar smells of cinnamon-roasted almonds, freshly cut grass, and salty, savory turkey legs. Apothecaries arrange their plethora of herbal teas, fortune tellers fiddle on their cell phones, and knights bundle up in hooded sweatshirts and chainmail to pass the time before the royal procession initiates the anticipated weekend of fantasy and merriment.
Stand ready in the catapults!
For longtime fairgoers, the lounging camels, cardboard fortresses, and busty damsels are familiar sights. The smells of kettle corn, a hot ham and cheddar, and funnel cakes are old friends. But that sound, that incessant banging of hammers on nearly molten steel, will never cease to intrigue visitors of the modern day.
I don't have a sir or anything, or ye old blacksmith. It's just Brock.
Brock Haddock, a 20-something blacksmith of the Salt Fork Craftsman, demonstrates the age-old craft not only at the annual Norman event, but also all around Oklahoma and a few surrounding states.
As the group, we have over 600 members stretching from Kansas to Texas and all throughout Oklahoma, and probably Arkansas as well.
Haddock started as the organization's youngest member at age 13.
When I was a kid, I was the one that was always getting into the matches and burning everything I wasn't supposed to. So that's probably one reason. I love being able to take something worthless or trash and junk and make something worthwhile, or if nothing else, just an awesome conversation piece. Yeah.
As a craftsman, Haddock can make weapons akin to medieval sorcery or knives and canes for practical use. But his favorite piece to weld is much more romantic.
There's something that I like to make, it's called a Russian rose. And what you do is you have a straight bar of metal. From that, you'll end up making a blossom, stem, and a leaf, all from that one straight bar. And it doesn't look anything like it was when it started. And it went from this piece of garbage to an awesome mantelpiece.
Machinists, printers, and even psychologists make up the Salt Fork Craftsman. But Haddock, who works for a gas company, wishes he could take on blacksmithing full-time because it's his true passion.
Some people, maybe for the psychiatrist, it might be an outlet for aggression and stress. I know I use it for that when I get overwhelmed at home or with work. It's my passion for a whole lot of different things, I guess. It's been a part of my life for almost half of my life.
He may be just Brock, but Haddock is surely a character among the 10 or so craftsmen working at the booth.
Most of the time, I'm only wearing my kilt, and so I'm the naked blacksmith, and it's been that way for several years, but it's too cold for that right now, and so I'm wearing a shirt.
Haddock says if you're not afraid to get burnt and you like working with your hands, blacksmithing is a good trade to pick up.
Careful, this might splatter, which hurts like hell.
For Assignment Radio, I'm Molly Evans.
You don't necessarily need anvils and irons to push the bounds of your creativity. Music can transport you into a new mood, a separate time, or even another place. Assignment Radio's Madeline Stebbins spoke to composition student at the University of Oklahoma, Emily Moore, about the unique challenges involved in composing and how her relationship with music has helped her through tough times.
I've been playing music as long as I can remember. I started playing the piano even before my mom would technically allow me to take lessons. I just listened to my siblings' lessons and did them on my own later. I started composing music really not consistently until high school, and I never imagined I would be a composition major until about halfway through my freshman year when I decided to switch.
When you're working on a piece, do you start out with an end goal in mind, or do you have an inspiration that you then take to the finish of the piece?
The answer is it depends. I've composed a variety of pieces in a variety of different ways. Sometimes I just start at the beginning and work straight through, and I don't really know where I'm going until I get there. Sometimes, particularly, I wrote a string quartet that's kind of based more on pulling back to classical forms, and so I started with a specific structure, an idea in mind, and kind of filled in the blanks. Often it's a mix of something in between that.
What's the hardest part for you of writing something from scratch?
Honestly, I want to say editing. I get all these crazy ideas in my head, and usually melodies will come to my mind really quickly. I guess I'm inspired a lot. But they don't usually translate that quickly into paper. Actually getting it down on paper and working through editing and re-editing, it's a lot more work than I had originally anticipated.
A year and a half ago, Emily felt her first symptoms of an undiagnosed illness. For weeks, she was unable to live on her own, and she's still feeling the effects of the mysterious sickness.
For one day, for the space of several hours, I could not move my arms or legs. It's a pretty terrifying experience, and to this day, no one knows why. The symptoms that have persisted are headache, nausea, muscle weakness, and fatigue. So it's interesting because they're very vague symptoms, and they're invisible. Belongs to the category, I guess, of what people call invisible diseases, where half the time, you know, no one would know anything was wrong unless you told them, or unless they're around you on a consistent enough basis.
Has that affected at all how you have interacted with music, what it has meant to you?
It's affected everything in my life. I think it's about the same time that I started writing as just kind of a subtitle to each one of my pieces, To the Glory of God. Music, as I consider it, is a gift from God. It's an expression that He's given us to let us say something that we couldn't say with words. And what I have to say is that God is good all the time. He's good through suffering, and He blesses His children. And that's what I try to make come out of my music.
Emily has been working with a piano tuner at OU and hopes to continue to learn the craft wherever she ends up. Until then, she'll keep composing. For Assignment Radio, I'm Madeline Stebbins.
Sometimes the most therapeutic sounds are noises we don't even think about or notice. Basketball shoes squeak on the polished wood floor. Grunts emerge from the weight room, and tennis shoes pound a hypnotic rhythm on the belt of a treadmill. Many people have to force themselves to go to the gym. But here, Tyler Johnston finds peace. But the majority of the time he spends at the gym isn't on him.
As a trainer, I've always been the person. I know a lot of the trainers there, they don't want to be bothered in their personal time. Like, that's their time. But I've always made it apparent from day one, like, if you need anything at 11 p.m. at night, you need anything at 6 a.m., because I want it to be about you, not about me.
Tyler is 5'8" and 175 pounds of muscle. And with his quiet but confident demeanor, you wouldn't believe he was ever considered scrawny. But as a child, Johnston was small and many times the butt of a joke.
I grew up without parents, so it was kind of like they were never in my life. And sometimes at school, like, people didn't understand that. So I was a kid who got picked on as a kid, I guess, a little bit, because I was a whole lot smaller than everyone in my grade. And I graduated early, so I was always, like, the smallest, one of the smallest kids in my grade, I guess.
But instead of getting down about being bullied, he persevered. His dedication comes from a fear of failure.
It's almost embarrassing. So, like, I put that same thing into my workouts, too. You got to get through it and push through it, because if you fail, everybody's going to think you're a failure. So you got to put in 100% every day.
This mentality comes from lessons learned as a child. Almost every weekend, he would stay with his extended family and tossed a basketball or football with his spry, 70-year-old great-grandmother.
Taught me a lot about work ethic and, I don't know, sticking things through. We used to put together, like, 3,500-piece puzzles when I was at her house, and we would get frustrated, and I would quit. And then she would tell me we couldn't quit because we had to finish it, and then we would frame them. So.
And as his great-grandmother developed cancer, Tyler's relationship with her strengthened. She moved in with him and his grandparents, and together they sat on an old couch in the living room watching every single game during the Oklahoma City Thunder's dismal first season. And 6 years later, as Johnston and I sat on his couch, the muted TV glowed as the Thunder played the Detroit Pistons. Today, he carries on that tradition by himself.
2 years before she got super sick, she would walk around the house every day, go feed her birds and everything, and you notice those habits go down here, like she can't do it anymore. And I think that when I noticed she couldn't do that anymore, it made me work so much harder, because I felt like I kind of had to pick up where she couldn't. Everyone else would go home, but I would stay there beside her. The last conversation me and my great-grandma ever had, we were watching a football game. I still remember the game. We were watching it in the hospice house in Oklahoma City. And we were talking about football and OU and all that stuff. And we were talking about grad school, and I was like, man, I'm afraid that I'm not going to be able to make it through this. I'm frustrated right now. I just got out of my stats class, and it was killing me at the time. I told her that I was afraid that I wasn't going to make it. And she told me the same thing that she told me when I decided to go back to school. Anything I set my mind to that I could do, because she's never seen anyone do what I've done with as little as I've had. And she told me that she was gonna pass away soon and it was my time to do it now. She said, I can't hold it for you any longer. It's your time to do it. That's the conversation that plays through my head pretty much every day. It's your time now, so go do it.
Tyler Johnston. We'll hear another story of aging and personal loss coming up in the next few minutes from This Land Radio. You've been listening to Assignment Radio. The views and opinions expressed this hour do not necessarily reflect those of KGOU, its staff, or the University of Oklahoma. You can find these stories on our website, kgou.org. We'd also love to hear your feedback. We'll be back with the last episode of the spring 2014 season, with the final stories from Molly and Madeline in just a few weeks. I'm Haley Thornton, and thanks for listening to KGOU.